All the while these wonderful discoveries were coming to light, Copenhagen had been the center where assessments were made and verdicts delivered on what was happening. By this time, Niels Bohr was no longer himself making detailed contributions to technical advances. Yet he remained deeply interested in interpretative issues, and he was the person to whose integrity and discernment the Young Turks, who were actually writing the pioneering papers, submitted their discoveries. Copenhagen was the court of the philosopher king, to whom the intellectual offerings of the new breed of quantum mechanics were brought for evaluation and recognition. In addition to this role as father figure, Bohr did offer an insightful gloss on the new quantum theory. This took the form of his notion of complementarity. Quantum theory offered a number of alternative modes of thought. There were the alternative representations of process that could be based on measuring either all positions or all momenta, the duality between thinking of entities in terms of waves or in terms of particles. Bohr emphasized that both members of these pairs of alternatives were to be taken equally seriously, and could be so treated without contradiction, because each complemented, rather than conflicted, with the other. This was because they corresponded to different and mutually incompatible experimental arrangements that could not both be employed at the same time. Either you set up a wave experiment, double slits, in which case a wave-like question was being asked that would receive a wave-like answer, an interference pattern, or you set up a particle experiment, detecting which slit the electron went through, in which case the particle-like question received a particle-like answer, two areas of impact opposite the two slits. Complementarity was obviously a helpful idea, though it by no means resolved all interpretative problems, as the next chapter will show. As Bohr grew older, he became increasingly concerned with philosophical issues. He was undoubtedly a very great physicist, but it seems to me that he was distinctly less gifted at this later avocation. His thoughts were extensive and cloudy, and many books have subsequently been written attempting to analyze them, with conclusions that have assigned to Bohr a variety of mutually incompatible philosophical positions. Perhaps he would not have been surprised at this, for he liked to say that there was a complementarity between being able to say something clearly and its being something deep and worth saying. Certainly, the relevance of complementarity to quantum theory, where the issue arises from experience, and we possess an overall theoretical framework that renders it intelligible, provides no license for the easy export of the notion to other disciplines, as if it could be invoked to justify any paradoxical pairing that took one's fancy. Bohr may be thought to have got perilously close to this when he suggested that complementarity could shed light on the age-old question of determinism and free will in relation to human nature. We shall postpone further philosophical reflection until the final chapter. Quantum logic. One might well expect quantum theory to modify, in striking ways, our conceptions of such physical terms as position and momentum. It is altogether more surprising that it has also affected how we think about those little logical words and or. Classical logic, as conceived of by Aristotle and the man on the Clapham Omnibus, is based on the distributive law of logic. If I tell you that Bill has red hair and he is either at home or at the pub, you will expect either to find a red-haired Bill at home or a red-haired Bill at the pub. It seems a pretty harmless conclusion to draw, and formally, it depends upon the Aristotelian law of the excluded middle. There is no middle term between at home and not at home. In the 1930s, people began to realize that matters were different in the quantum world.